Duck South Studios in Oxford, Mississippi.
We're mass communicating.
It's a bold strategy, Cotton. Let's see if it pays off for them.
This is the End of the Line podcast, powered by DuckSouth.com.
I gave it a 10.
Sweep the leg. You have a problem with that.
And now, here are your hosts, Rocky LaFleur.
Everybody on? Good.
Great. Grand. Wonderful.
No yelling on the bus.
Josh Webb.
Sorry I had a fight familiar, but I'm party.
And Jake Latondras.
And bad news.
Also starring Rob Kroon.
I bet this guy's into the woods $100.
And Bradley Ramsey.
No, Mark, didn't say it.
Showtime.
All right, here we go. Hold your ears, folks. It's showtime.
Showtime, everybody! Showtime!
Welcome to the End of the Line podcast. I'm Rocky LaFleur, sitting here on a Wednesday night. It's Mr. Ramsey Russell joins me from a hotel in what state?
Wyoming.
A big cold desk shooting up
Man,
there.
Man, I guess you're right. It's, it really is maybe a big cold desert, except for the North Platte River, which is an absolute oasis. Rocky, I'm convinced that I come out here to western Nebraska or Wyoming when I was forest age, I'd never gone back home. Man, this is some of the most beautiful, unspoiled country I've ever set foot in. You know, I was telling somebody just the other day, Ryan Livingston over in Nebraska, we hunt with him at Prairie Rock Outfitters. Man has got 300,000 acres of beautiful prairie habitat for ducks and geese and ginormous whitetails and muleys. I mean, unbelievable. 300,000 acres. I don't even know how big Rankin County is, but I bet it ain't that big. It's big. And the neighbors are 40 miles apart in places. You got to go 50, 60 miles to Walmart or to eat dinner, unless you're eating there at the house. And we ate good at his lodge because, you know, he also grows beef. And we ate real good steaks. And it was just, the hunting was utterly amazing. See, the North Platte River, get this, I'm 1,100 miles from my home right now, and I'm still in the Mississippi River watershed. I'm right here in the Mississippi River watershed. And the North Platte River starts in Steamboat Springs, Colorado. That snow melts off and runs, and it wraps its way, kind of coils a little bit to the west, a little bit to the north, through Wyoming, and then goes all the way through down to about mid Nebraska, where it converges with the South Platte River into the Platte River. The Platte River then runs over towards the east end of Nebraska into the Missouri River, which is a major tributary of the Mississippi River. And it's just hard to believe that sitting there watching water flow down the Platte River out here in this high country desert, you know, it just looks like Dancing with Wolves. And it's just hard to believe that water running down that stream. It's going to go right under the bridge at Vicksburg, Mississippi one day. It's crazy.
It is amazing.
You know, it's amazing. But we have had, by our standards, especially as compared to what's going on in the Deep South right now with the migration and the paucity of ducks, we've had a spectacular hunt. One day was a little wonky. Highlight that day was four shot of his first golden eye. Next 2 days, we limited on greenheads. Didn't even fool with the hen mallards. Just take the time, kill all greenheads. Yesterday, in Wyoming, we set up on Canada geese. There were big geese and little geese and medium geese. A lot of these different races of Canada's coming out of Alberta and Montana. And we limited on them about 10 o'clock in the morning. The morning, we went and set up not too far from there on a duck goose combo, and just like yesterday and just like some of the days before, you know, the weathermen out here ain't no better than the weathermen anywhere else on the world. And what know, we all want wind, you know, for duck hunting. So you can steer them a duck without wind in the sails, like a rudderless ship. They just list anywhere. You got to be able to steer them. But it's like yesterday shooting those Canada geese, it was like just 2-3-4 mile an hour wind. And by 10 o'clock in the morning, we had two or three geese. Plenty of geese in the air. And at 10 o'clock, wind just came out of nowhere. This old prairie wind, boom, hooked up. Got to about 10, 15 miles an hour. And at 10:25, we had all our Canada geese. We were done. And this morning, we needed that wind. We was hunting over some water and a little old lake out of the wind. They forecast for some gale force winds. It didn't happen until about 10 or 11 o'clock. And then we got a bunch of birds in, but the minute that little front passed, boom, it was quiet again. Ducks everywhere, but they just wouldn't work like we wanted them to. And talk about historic. I mean, golly, you know, I learned today, right there, I mean, like we're hunting about 6 or 7 miles from a place called Fort Laramie. Fort Laramie was the first settlement in Wyoming. It was a military installation. And and right there on the very property, I mean, literally where we were sitting in one of the most comfortable duck ponds I've ever been in my life today, out of the wind with heaters, and just full concealment, sliding office chairs, just as nice and comfortable is possible. Right where I was sitting today was a historic Sioux Indian camp of 400 to 4,000 Indians, an encampment. It's just 5 or 6 miles from Fort Laramie. And at that time, I'm guessing, you know, sometime in early to mid-1800s, you know, everything was just cool as a cucumber, nothing going on. And apparently somebody coming down the Oregon Trail had a cow stray off on the Indian camp, and they were scared to go get it or didn't know where it was or what. Well, the Indian just said, well, you know, they don't want this cow, we do, so they ate him. When them settlers got over there, the pioneers got over there to Fort Laramie, they reported a stolen cow. A young, rash military officer went over there with 26 soldiers. And some people say they were drinking, some people say they don't. And it looked rocky. It's a little town we're staying in Torrington, Wyoming. We get up every morning. And he said, well, you know, if you don't want breakfast, you can meet me there at 5:45. And if you want breakfast, yeah, I'll get there about 5:15. Me and Ford been leaving here at 5 o'clock. It's like a lot of locals come in just to BS. And then the other hunters come in, and it's just a lot of colorful characters, learn a lot of history, and learn a lot about this town. It's just a, golly, I guess if I lived here, I'd go there every morning at 5 o'clock. And so you learn a lot, you hear a lot. And anyway, they got in this row about this cow being stolen. And the whoever was in charge, I think his name was Conquering Bear, he's like, well, you know, the officer was saying, give me the people that stole the cows. We're going to take them to Fort Laramie for trial. He's like, well, nobody stole the cow. The whole village ate him. He showed up. Nobody wanted him. We ate him. What can we do? Do you want some horses? What do you want? I mean, we'll Indian trade. Well, I wasn't good enough for the guy. Gratner was his name. And when the Indians, just exasperated with the failed negotiations, turned to walk away, he ordered they be shot. Boom, they shot him. Got about 5 or 10 braves right there below a camp of 4,000 Indians. And when you're being shot at, what do? When you're being attacked, you conquer. So the Indian went out there and killed them all. And that one instance started the whole Plains Indian War.
Really?
Started the whole thing. Because that, wow, following, you know, word got back to Washington, hey, these Indians out here have killed 27 of your troopers. And they sent another general out here with some fresh troops. And early that spring, when the snow was deep or whatever on the creek bank and Indians were still hibernating, it was just one of them kind of deals where the military went in and killed them all. Men, women, children, dogs, horses, everything, killed them. Well, you know, there's a whole lot more Indians than what was in that little camp. That's where the whole thing started. It's just amazing to be sitting, shooting birds and hunting and seeing all this beautiful country just right there. Like, you know, over there in Nebraska, Ryan Livingston has got his logo is like a rock. And his little hashtag is Hunt the Rock. Well, the rock is Chimney Rock. And when you were on the Oregon Trail as a pioneer heading west, you got to Chimney Rock, you were halfway. And it's just everywhere you look, there's history. And it's just amazing. I mean, it's just like being in the middle of a cowboy movie, except, man, Rocky, there ain't pintails, shovelers, green wings, blue wings. There ain't nothing. You come out to this part of the world because there's mallards. Mallards, 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 and Canada geese. You golden eyes, but mallards. Mallards galore. Central flyway limits of mallards, 5. And I saw your post the other day.
Here we go. I want to hear it.
And I'm going to tell you, we're sitting here thinking, well, it's not exactly what we were expecting. It's a little slower. We're being patient. Man, I've been in the blind with Mr. John LaMonaco, with Jake LaTondres, with my son Forrest, some other people, and we've had just a really good time visiting and stories and just really good time and comfortable blind, stuff like that. But we've had to work to get our birds. It hadn't been just a slam dunk. And it's because they're waiting on their birds.
I want to preface this, what you're about to tell. A lot of people that's listening to this podcast, they listen to it because they saw Ramsey Russell's name in it. They know it's going to be good stuff. They know it's going to be a lot of wisdom, a lot of knowledge. But just listen to what Ramsey's about to say. All these people freaking out about this migration, just hear him out. Just listen to what he's saying.
Well, let me say this, Rocky. It is 8 o'clock Wyoming time. And I'm sitting in a place where it gets minus 50. It gets minus 50 here in wintertime. And it is 42 degrees when I walked out of a restaurant from supper. 42 degrees at night. And it'll cool on down to about 30. And the wind blows because it's prairie. But the temperatures are running 30 to 50 degrees. They hadn't had any weather to speak of. There's been no snow stick, nothing. And so we're shooting Canadas, but they're getting a little wary, a little stale. All the dumb birds are gone. They've been hunting these Canadas for a month and a half now. You got to work these birds. The dumb mallards are gone. You got to have that big wind and be in a place real protected. It's got to be super easy. It's got to be Ray Charles easy. A duck to want to come in and commit. If he can think about it, if he can do anything but just make it easy to come in and decoys, he ain't coming in. Because they're waiting on snow cover in Montana and Alberta. All the Canada geese we're hunting up here, the big ones, this is their wintering ground, the North Platte River between here and about Platte, Nebraska. North Platte, Nebraska, boom. This stretch right here on North Platte River, this is where they winter. These are the birds coming out of Peace Country, Alberta, in parts of Alberta. And the big ones, this is where they winter. The little ones are going to fly on down towards further down the central flyway. They still got to go through Colorado. They got to end up down in Kansas, parts of Oklahoma and Texas. They ain't really showed up yet. And I can tell you from what I've seen, there ain't no snow. There's nothing. It's warm. It's Mississippi warm out here. No humidity, but warm. These birds ain't going nowhere. And the boys around here are waiting on birds that are still coming out of Alberta. And they know the birds are there because they haven't seen certain things yet. And, y'all may remember, I got real optimistic back in September when I chased around Canada for a month, got snowed on 4 times. And by the time I got to North Dakota, late September, air traffic control reported to Matthew Pill of Dirty Bird Outfitters that they saw birds leaving Canada. Well, that was true. A lot of them birds, probably some of the birds we've been hammering on, chipping away at down the deep south. But after about a week or two after I left, it warmed up, and they caught a major influx from the south of their birds coming back. Those birds ain't gone nowhere to speak of. Along the Mississippi Flyway, Wisconsin, they've had some pretty serious ice, parts of Minnesota. but it's really a pretty mild winter. And the only people I know of that have really been having a decent season at all have been out in that central flyway, parts of Texas, not all parts, parts of Kansas and Oklahoma, Missouri. But, you know, all the reports I'm hearing that the outfitters that are putting any birds up whatsoever are working two or three times as hard to get the client on them. The geese, those geese they're killing had a real poor hatch. They're very difficult. The ducks are getting real stale because everybody on the whole continent, except for the Pacific flyway, reports I'm hearing out of California, Washington, Oregon, they're having a hellacious year. My outfitter down in Obregon, Mexico, hey, if we ain't got birds in Mississippi, why the heck to go to Mexico? Well, you know, a lot of those birds that go to Mexico are those photo period migrators. Frank is reporting having seen his pintails and teal, even the cinnamon teal, showed up weeks earlier than normal. Of course, now they're coming out of that Pacific flyway primarily. So it's almost like you got this fractionalized migration. You know, some of the birds kind of left when that first little winter hit and all the Canadians like, uh-oh, when this happens, we're going to have a bad winter. And here comes Indian summer. The birds came back, and it really hadn't got brutal winter. I mean, I'm telling you, these guys up here, Rocky, next week, next Tuesday or Wednesday, they're supposed to get their first snow. Like when you walk outside, there's snow falling. There's snow on the ground. You see white out in the wheat fields. That's supposed to happen next Tuesday or Wednesday, and all the farmers and stuff are telling us, y'all need to stay. Y'all need to stay because y'all ain't seen nothing like you're fixing to see. So it's just one of them years, man, you know. And
hey, let me ask you a crazy question. I want out there to you real quick before we jump back in the story. Does it bother you that people are still killing a ton of blue wings?
No, it supports the there's a lot of blue wings down in Mexico right now, but it doesn't bother me. They're killing it supports the whole conversation we're having. That it's a very warm year. The bird, those teal aren't having to go down into Mexico and Central America to find nice weather that they normally have to in a typical December, January. See, it's just there's something going on, some weather pattern going on. You know, even in Alaska, you remember I was in Alaska 10 days ago, and we called it cold happening. The wind was blowing hard, but it was still in the mid to high 30s. And the Alaskans were laughing, saying, this ain't winter. This is very warm. It's above average in Alaska. It's above average in Canada. It's above average in Nebraska. You know, Christmas Day or something, it's going to be in the 60s down in Mississippi. I looked at the 10-day forecast trying to figure out what I'm going to do between Christmas and New Year, and it's going to be 50s and 60s. You know, so it doesn't surprise me at all, and I hope there's a bunch of blue wings around to shoot. I'll be happy to shoot them. But anyway, Rocky, it's one of those seasons, man. And you know, and it's frustrating to me. It's frustrating to everybody. But then, Dave, what are you going to do? What are you going to do? You know, play golf? No, I'm not going to play golf.
I just think that it's got blown way out of proportion because. You know, social media is so dominant now. You know, we've had bad seasons. The first year I was a guide, it sucked. Oh, it was awful. Back in 19.
Well, you know what we're dealing with.
I mean, there's been, you know, Rocky, there's been years in 20 years that I guided, three or four years that were awful, that were similar to this. But just didn't have social media to bitch and complain about it.
Pat and Bill cited the number. They cited the number the other day on that podcast they did. I don't know that number. I'm going to say it's been about 20 years that we've been under a 6-duck, 4-mounted limit. And most of these social media guys, these younger guys, they don't remember that as recently as the mid to late 90s, we were shooting 2 mallards, 3 ducks. They don't remember that. You know, and so it can be a duck number fluctuation. It can be temperature fluctuations. I thought it was pretty interesting today. I don't know who posted it up or where. I just happened to see it. But we did have some quiet time in the blind today waiting on the wind to blow and the birds to do their thing. And somebody posted up an ESPN article about the duck migration. Ducks ain't coming south, blah, 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 blah. Boy, everybody flew off on it. That was the holy answer. And I read that report, and I seen that name of that Fish and Wildlife guy. I'm going, I don't think he works for fishing. I mean, my gosh. And I know he doesn't work in that office anymore. That was 20 years ago or whatever, a long time ago. And I looked up at the top. It was a 2005 article. You know, how many of these guys saying the sky's falling and all this mess going on, how many of them were hunting in 2005? That was a tough season. Birds weren't coming south. You know, and I don't know, Rock, is it global warming? Is it, I don't know. But weather fluctuates. Last year was a good season for us. Last year, we had a great season. We had one of our top seasons last year. And I distinctly remember on a few occasions having to go out and bust ice. And it'd been a while since I'd done that in Mississippi. Been a long while. Fingers crossed that sometime between now and end of season, I'll have to do it again. You know, because that could pull a lackluster season out of the can real quick. You know, out of the crapper, that'd be, boy, let a good freeze hit and ducks come down, boom, that could help it. Man, look, best I can tell, these ducks got a long way to come. Not just a little to come, a long way to come. You know, I think they got a long way to come to get down to where we are and just have a fabulous season. And
I agree.
I say, hey, man, make the best of it, you know. What am I going to do between Christmas and New Year? I might sleep in the morning and go deer hunting in the afternoon. You know, but I'm going to be at camp. I'm not going, like I say, I'm not going to play golf.
Like something pretty significant to happen to push them this far south, this late. But we're on the upswing of days getting longer too. Matter, you know, I know some ducks are photo migrators, some aren't, but days are getting longer. That clock's ticking in their mind.
Bill made a good point the other day, and I guess maybe I knew it, but had never heard it articulated or said it. But I think he hit the nail on the head. I think there is a point. I think there's a, I don't know what that point is or what that cue is, but I think there's an invisible line on a calendar that once you get past that date, relative to daylight length, even if bunch of winter weather comes down late, those ducks ain't just going to come south and stay. I believe they're going to retreat as quickly as they can. You know what I'm saying? I think you got those years going to push them down right. They're going to come on into the south and stay, and you'll get the last comers coming later. But I do think that in a year like this year we're having, that if we get a big front, a big clipper come through, I believe it's going to be great. It's going to be fun. Until most of them just retreat like the tide right on back up with the 50-degree thermocline. And so I believe at this point they're going to stay as far north as they can. And maybe the silver lining is maybe there's some precipitation in the country. The birds, because they didn't have to fly south and do all that stuff this year, they ought to be in good reproductive health. If we got some good wetlands, we can always hope for next year that they're going to have a banner year. A bunch more ducks. You know, you got to look at the silver lining.
That is a great point that nobody has made that I've heard so far. They ought to be in great, great reproductive health.
They ought to be in good reproductive health. I mean, that's the whole thing, energy conservation. And it's a fact. I mean, it's been a long time since I took those courses in school under Rick Kaminsky. But you know, the reason there's more male ducks females, there's more drakes than hens, is because it takes twice the energy. It takes a hen twice the energy to manufacture a hen egg than it does a drake egg. And so, you know, the better and the more energy she has, the more eggs she, not only the more eggs she can lay, but the healthier those eggs are going to be. You know, therefore the healthier the chicks are going to be. Therefore, the healthier those those little ducklings, the better their odds are at survival. You know, it is what it is, man. We did a little segment in the blind day. We all got to talking about the history and, you know, Rocky, through this stretch where I'm sitting right now to about 200 miles, 150, 200 miles of here in Nebraska east on that North Platte River. Do you know it overwinters 500,000 Canada geese? That's astounding. And I don't mean the more resident birds like we got back home, son. I'm talking migrators. That's just astounding to me. 500,000 geese in this little old bitty narrow creek that they call a river. And but we got to talking about, you know, we're a long way from home, but, you know, what's a couple of tanks of gas? You know, I mean, if you can, go find some ducks. You know, there's other places to hunt than where there ain't no ducks. And, you know, fortunately, I just made a road trip out of it, and that's what we do. We go out here, we're working. We came out here and making a big U.S. hunt list loop. Met with Ryan Livingston at Prairie Rock Outfitters. Met with Wild Nebraska Outfitters up here, and they both are great outfitters. A lot of mallards, a lot of Canada geese. And, you know, it's a long way from home to be, but shot a few mallards. Shot more than we'd have shot back home, I can tell you. And have had a great time. You know, and it's just making silk out of a sow's ear for us. You know, I just don't know what we do back home. I guess I'd be at the office working, and that wouldn't be no fun. But anyway, fingers crossed, Rocky. Maybe Santa Claus will bring us something. But I look at the 10-day forecast and I don't see anything promising. they're going to get a little weather coming. But, you know, I'm just going to get up and go with the flow. And if I got to go deer hunt, I guess I will.
Yeah. All right, look, we got about 15 to 20 minutes. Can we get it in, you think?
Yeah, we'll finish it up. You know, we talk about this Russia story.
This is my favorite
Russia
part.
Russia was epic. Russia was good. And we got sidetracked talking about my Malton friends. That's who I met them over there. We became friends. They came to the States. We hunted. But we became friends in Russia. And we're way up Rocky. We're 20 kilometers from the White Sea. And the little old towns up there, all the houses are built out of just raw lumber. You know, note to self. Somebody said describe Russia, that part of Russia north of St. Petersburg, in one word, trees. Trees. Massive, millions of acres, million-acre land holdings of primal black forest. You know, if they could ever get all of that wood, that lumber, and that part of Russia to the market cost efficiently, they would glut the whole world market of timber. It's that good of quality. It's that much trees. We were deep in the forest hunting those capercaillie at night. Click, click, step, step, walking two miles down bear trails. And we became really good friends with these Maltons. And y'all may remember from the first story, you know, what I've learned is you just kind of become immersed and you go with the flow. It's like if you're expecting to find a Hilton everywhere you go, well, you can stay in the Hilton. But if you stay in a Hilton in Russia and a Hilton in Mississippi and a Hilton in Texas and a Hilton in Australia, it's just the Hilton experience. And what's so fun about doing a lot of this world travel is to kind of be immersed in their culture. Be Russian. So, you know, you don't know what time it is because it's only dark 4 hours anyway. Somebody says, what time is it? 10 o'clock, a.m. or p.m.? I don't know. I've been here two or three days. I have no idea what time it is. They serve three meals. They don't serve bacon, eggs, and pancakes. You don't know if that's breakfast or lunch or dinner. It's just three meals a day. And and typical Russian, every time we sit at the dinner table, the vodka shots float. Maybe we're having for breakfast. Maybe we're having for a midnight snack. Who knows? It's Russia. Drink vodka. I got to know. You know, it's the part of the world, Rocky, that it's like their lawns and these little villages are decorated with winter vegetables, firewood, and empty vodka bottles. Okay? And we were staying in the nicest house in town, which is a kind of a prefab log cabin. Cook came by and cooked us Russian food every day, which wasn't too bad. And but I had been noticing that behind every cabin was a lot of times a little, like a little workshop, a little work building or something behind it. And one day it just occurred to me that all these little shots, these little storage buildings behind there had a smokestack, smoke coming out sometimes. So I guess it gets so cold, maybe they just have a little wood-burning stove in their shop. I said something to my host. He goes, no, that's not a shop, that's a sauna. I go, a sauna? Now, the only time I say a sauna's at the gym, you know, it's them godforsaken places that you sweat. And who, you want to sweat, come down and walk down my driveway to the mailbox in the summertime, you know? I mean, sweat. Oh, Russian sauna, very big thing. Very, very, very big thing. Very traditional. Well, you know, guess what? When you live 20 kilometers from the Arctic Circle and it's cold all the time, sweating's kind of a big thing. They find it very therapeutic in that part of the world to do that kind of stuff. And not only do they just like going there and sweat, they make a day of it. Typical sauna house. As you walk in the outside door, there's just a little changing room. You know, put on your swimsuits or hang your clothes up and go in deck or whatever you're going to do. And then the next room you go into, it gets a little warmer because there's like a furnace, the backside of a furnace in there, and a wood-burning furnace. And it's got hot. You may even hit the tap and buddy, boiling hot. Make coffee and hot tea water comes out. That's something good. You mix it with river water or creek water, snow water, to get the temperature right, and you bathe. Like bar and soap and shampoo, you bathe. And what the Russians will do is they'll make a day of it, man. When they go fire up the sauna, everybody in the family gets giddy, you know, because they go make a day of it, man. They've been sitting around, I don't know for how many days, not sweating and bathing, but they go sweat. They make a day of it, man, 150, 200 degrees. They get in there and start sweating. Then they'll come out there and bathe. Then they'll go back in there and sweat some more. Then they'll come back in there and bathe again. I mean, and they'll go it on. According to our host, Alexi, he's like, oh, Russians spend all day, 4 or 5 times. Americans, no. You're a beginner. You Maltons, no. No. He said 3, maybe 4 times. No more. He showed us the program. And, oh, it's very relaxed. It's going to be very good. You'll be Russian now, he says. So when we walk back there to where it is, just right behind the house, he gives us all a big old quart beer, put it in snow outside. You know, it can be nice and cold when we come out of here. And the whole idea of a sauna is kind of lost on the southern boy. And I'm going to tell you, because I got in there and, you know, went in there with my swim shorts on, like all self-respecting southern boys and people at a gym go to a sauna. And we all sat in there and we sweated till we couldn't stand it. And when we got into this heat room, it was kind of about the size of a little league dugout. You know, just a narrow little building. Had a double-step bench, you know, where you sit up there. And I mean, you couldn't reach out your hand and touch the opposing wall, but it was maybe twice that far. And there was a business side of that furnace. Oh, sorry. Business side of that furnace was going. And you know, man, they come in there and had rocks all around it, and they throw some wood in there. And I noticed there was a bucket of water, and it had 2 bundles of switches. And one bundle was like evergreen, and one bundle was like aspen. And they'd take them sticks out and slot and throw that water on them stones. Whoo, it'd steam up, man. It's like, oh, my God. Temperature just spiked on the thermometer. And I'm sitting there trying to tell myself, man, this is Russia. I'm going to be Russian. You know, it's what Russians do. And what else is there to do? And I got my capercaillie. I got my ducks. Snowing outside. What else am I going to do? I'll come in here and sweat. You know, of course, I could do this in Mississippi, just cutting my grass. And so anyway, we go out there and we bathe, you know, get the bar soap and bathe off real good, get the water just right. And what a lot of them Russian bathhouses will have, they'll have the hot water tap, you know, coming out of the furnace and the cold water, and you mix it up and just get the temperature right. But then they'll have a bucket, like a wooden pail. It's about, you know, 5-6 foot off the ground where you stand under it, and you pull a rope, and that's ice cold water. That's the one that you, okay, that's when you're done. You pull that 5-gallon bucket of ice cold water on top of you after you done all this mess. So I'm getting this program. I'm like, well, you know, so me and Patrick and Steven, we go in there and we sweat it out. We talk about hunting and, you know, again, stories. You know, they're from Malta and all these little migrations come through there. And Patrick was telling me how his grandfather used to arrange these mist nets and catch these little finches, these little finches that would come through from Greece, and how the whole his whole backyard was a big mist net covered garden with all these finches in it. And, you know, we're just sitting in there telling stories and sweating, you know. And so we go in one time, we come out, kind of soap off. We go back in a second time, we kind of come off. Third time, we're out there bathing, and they said, "Screw this, Ramsey. We're done." I said, "Well, you're done. No, man, I'm gonna give it one more time." He said, "No more than four times. I'm gonna push it to the limit."
And at this moment, you had no clue what was in your.
No, I had no clue. I mean, no, it was just us three Maltons, man. You know, and I'm gonna go in there one more time. I don't need to go in there. I don't want to go in there. By God, he said four. I'm gonna do four. You know. You know, look, when a Russian tells you you're American and you ain't cut out for this kind of stuff, you know, that's like a dare. That's like a challenge, right? You know?
By day, you'll prove him wrong.
By God, yeah. You know, I'm from Mississippi. I, you know, this ain't nothing. So I go in there and I'm sitting by myself and I say, okay, 5 minutes. 5 minutes. And boy, I mean, it's like time was going slow. Sitting in there, you know, just sweating, dripping, and looking at my watch. And, you know, you think you've been in there an hour, and you look, 15 seconds have passed. And right about the time, 4 minutes into this thing, and I'm fixing to say, you know, 50, 45, I'm counting down to that minute. I'm going to step out, hit that whole cold bucket, go out there and get my cold beer and go catch up with them around the table in the house. The door opens, and here comes my two Russian guides. Now, Lexi is about my size, a little taller. He comes walking in butt naked. Well, I've been in the gym before. I mean, we've all been in a man's locker room. You know, it ain't no big deal. You know, okay, naked. You know, and I'm going to look straight ahead. Well, in comes my guide. And this man, I'm telling y'all, his belt is as long as he is tall. He's short and muscular, except his belt is as long as he is tall. He's a big old man, and he's wearing cobalt blue, so bright you got to squint if you looked at him directly, thong underwear, cobalt blue. And I'm not looking, but when you're in a closet, when you're in a closet at about 180 degrees, you can't, you know, you can see stuff out of your peripheral vision. So I'm looking straight ahead.
Listen, I want you to know this. I want you to understand this. I'm not laughing at the homosexuality of this story. I'm laughing because one of the most respected duck hunters in the world happened.
You know, everybody wants to be Ramsey. You know, everybody said, "Oh, I want to do Ramsey stuff." And I say, "Yeah, you want to do Ramsey stuff? So it's time to do real Ramsey stuff." And you find yourself in predicaments. So, you know. The predicament I've so far described is just kind of like going to the gym and to the locker room. Some man comes out, you know them guys in the locker room. There's towels everywhere, and most folks walk around with a towel, but you know them guys walk around, you know, with their junk swinging left and right. Like, I mean, who are them? I mean, I'm saying, you see them guys. You know, so I'm in Russia. This guy's Russian, and it's his Russian bathhouse, and, you know, I'll just ease on. They're sitting on the floor. And they got to step up on the step so that I can walk by them to get to the door. Now, I'm just going to say, because I was about 30 seconds from walking out when they walked in, that my time has passed. So now I'm not just wanting to get out of there. I'm just getting a little anxious because I'm about to burn up. You know, I'm like, I got to get out of here. You know, they don't speak English and I don't speak Russian. And no, literally, the only word my guide speaks is thumb up good, thumb down bad. That's it. There ain't no other word that we can communicate, nothing. Good, bad, that's it. One time he did his thumb up, and but he was pointing up. He broke the code. And I'm like, hey, I'm the Fonz, good. You get it? Good. But anyway, I digress. So, Lexi's still standing there in the walkway. He ain't climbed up yet to where I can walk past him. And the big'un, Ravon, or whatever his name was, he walks towards me. I'm still sitting up, so he's just right there by him. He walks up and reaches in that bucket, and, man, he takes both them sticks. and start sliding, throwing the water on the stones. Man, it's so foggy in there, I can't see nothing now. And I'm temperature spikes, I'm probably about to black out. And, they're making all them good noises and stuff like that because they're enjoying that heat just enveloping them. And by the time they start talking in Russian, the big one walks back. He said, oh, yeah, you see, and he grabs up them switches. And Alexei turns around, grabs the bench, you know, with his back, you know, and the big guy in the Speedo starts flailing him with these limbs. And I ain't looking. I'm looking at the freaking wall straight ahead of me, but you can't not see it out of your peripheral vision. And even if you couldn't see it, he ain't just getting flailed with these limbs, because as I learned, those limbs, those switches, weren't for sloshing water. It was like, you know, for making your pores open up and things, stimulating your skin to open up so you really sweat. Well, man, the big guy is absolutely, I mean, I know I got good whippings and when I was a child with switches that weren't near that count. But this man's getting beaten to death, and he's making sex noises. I'm in, you know, and I can't, you know, I'm thinking, I can't get out of here without rubbing all up in him. And I ain't doing that. And I had these visions, you know. The only time I like to hear sex noises, it obviously during sex, and also duck guides. Because let me tell you something, folks. If you're on a duck hunt and your duck guides are making sex noises, stuff is dying. It's a good hunt. Oh, God. Ooh. It's a good hunt. That's it. Not in a Russian sauna. When a big guy wearing a blue Speedo is beating a naked guy with sticks. That ain't good. And I could just, you know, I'm looking, there ain't no other way out of there but that door. And to get through that door, I got to go with two sweaty Russians having this thing going on. And I'm just thinking, you know, and I could just envision, you know, at some point in time in the future, people coming in there and just seeing claw marks on the side of the wall where I try to dig my way through the opposite wall. And so I'm going to say I was teetering around blackout from being in the heat for now 10 minutes. And when they content walk out to the bathroom part of stuff, I'm out. And I skipped the shower. I skipped the soap bar soap. I skipped the cold bucket I've been looking forward to for four outings going in there. I went straight outside, my own self butt naked with a towel wrapped around, and my little boxer shorts on. Went right into the lake. It didn't everybody. I think it made a little metal sound when I hit that cold water. I was so hot. Got in, got dressed, got my beer, and I walk in. I walk into the house, and there's Steven and Patrick. Man, they're relaxed. They're on their third or fourth beer now. They're like, Rumsey, what? And they look at me, and I go, Rumsey, are you okay? I go, nope. No, I'm not. And I sat down and started drinking my beer, and they're like, Rumsey, what happened? I go, Steve, are just some things a grown man can't take back seeing. And so I started telling them this story, and we're all just howling and laughing. You know, because it's funny after the first beer, so telling this story. And then walks the two Russians, and they see us all laughing, having a good time. They ain't got a clue we're laughing about this situation. And Alexei walks up to me, puts his hands on me, pats me on the back, and says, we made Rumsey good Russian now. And, you know, the joke was lost on them, but it wasn't legit. I mean, just the irony of him saying that, when we haven't told that story, we all just bust out laughing. But, you know, that was the ending to an otherwise really, really good Russian trip.
You know, you put that story in anybody else's hands, that story's not that good. It's average. You put it in Rumsey Russell's hands, it's awesome.
Well, let me tell you the rest of the story. We went back to Russia last year. Alexei's got a new cabin. Oh, beautiful cabin, nice cabin. About half as far. We're not going quite up to the White Sea unless we go later. The first thing I noticed is a big, big house. They got a big sauna out in the backyard. And I walked in there and gave it a tour before I even thought about cranking it up. Nice and big, you know. And, let's just say it this way. That room, that sauna room was bigger, and my seat was right by the front door. I didn't go no further into that room than right by the front, because ain't one nothing like that gonna block my eggs this time. And it really is kind of neat to be in Russia, because it's absolutely it's pretty cold up there, you know, and to come out of a sauna and, you know, smoke coming off your skin, hitting the snow and stuff like that. But now I learned my lesson. If you go into a Russian sauna, folks, sit by the door. Don't sit anywhere. Sit by the exit. Just be forewarned.
You know how this? Oh, let me just say this. I want to say this. Ramsey and I were talking, I guess it was 3-4 weeks ago. And, well, I guess it was right before we started recording. And
yeah.
I said, you were talking about hunting in Russia. I said, man, Ramsey, you think you're the one lucky guy. You're one blessed man to be able to do all that you do. He said, yeah, see all that, the shell of it, but you don't see much. You know, hold on, let me phrase this the right way. Everybody wants to be Ramsey until it's time to do Ramsey, you know what? And I was like, what? Why are you saying that?
Yeah.
He goes into this sauna story.
Rocky, we could talk about stuff like that. I got more stories I'll share with you one day. But, man, you know, I'm just like everybody else back home. I hope we get some ducks. But, guys, if we don't get no ducks, let's just go have fun. You know what I'm saying? Another good upside of a warm season people ain't thinking about? It's a great time to take little kids out of the duck blind. When it's really good and it's really cold, kids can't take it. I'm telling you, they can't take it. Take your kids out there to duck blind. Bring them a BB gun. Let them shoot your decoys. Something.
Yeah. And don't forget that
spend some time with
contest.
Man, that's a great contest too, Rock. I mean to tell you that. That is, I cannot wait to see those videos. I wish my kids were babies still. I can't wait to see these videos. You know what I'm saying? That is a great idea y'all are doing. But you know what? It's the perfect year for it. It's the perfect year for it. Are they going to shoot a bunch? No, they ain't got to. I'm telling you, kids don't spell love D-U-C-K. They spell it T-I-M-E. It's just a great time to bring those babies, those children, those little kids that you might not otherwise take except till season. It's a good time to get them out there. And when they get bored, you know, when they get tired of shooting, you're plinking your decoys with their BB guns and eating honey buns and chocolate milk, well, go do something else. But you got to do something together. You got to show them the ropes. They're going to have fun just being with you and throwing them decoys and seeing the dog get wet and do stuff like that. You know what I'm saying? And that it's a good time to get them folks out in them duck blinds. I mean, you know, we got to make silk out of a sow's ear. This hunting season is not, you know, remember me telling you, Canada was good. But it was off. It was off this year. All the outfitters, I tell you, those outfitters busted their tails. The good outfitters busted their tails to make them hunts happen. It wasn't nothing easy this year. And I've been to Arkansas, Mississippi, Louisiana, Nebraska, Wyoming, and it ain't a magic season. Everybody's working harder, but it's a season. And it's the only season we get this year. So, man, make the best of it. And all that negativity, all that complaining, all that, oh, the sky's falling. Well, you know, make the best of it, dude, because you can't change it. You know? Can't change it. So, that's my message for the night.
Well, I'll add this. And in those good years, when you are hammering down on them, remember these days. Soak in those great days.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, it's like I've said before, you know, real life happens between the volleys. And the last 5 days, we've shot ducks. We've had a wonderful trip. But there have been some long stretches of time. We spent a couple of days all day out in the blind just because it was natural. You know, dang, Forrest bought him a loaf of bread and ham, brought ham sandwiches for everybody, and everybody had thermos of coffee and water and snacks. And, man, we just sat out there and had such a great visit. You know, I've known John for a long time, but never really had hunted with him. And he's a very, very, very accomplished big game hunter. And he's got a lot of his own stories from around the world. And he's He's 88 years old, and just a lot of wisdom. And it's just been a man. I'm gonna tell you what, he can move quick. He's good with a shotgun. Loves that duck hunting. And it's just been a real pleasure hunting and just, you know. And then everybody gets quiet. We're working ducks. We shoot a few ducks. Man, everybody's spirits lively. And then we're somber and quiet, just enjoying our time together. That's all you can do, man. You know, and you're right. The seasons like this make you remember the really good ones. And it's nothing any of us can do. I mean, you know, unless somebody's got a weather machine they ain't telling us about. There's nothing we can do.
That's right.
Make the best of it.
Ramsey.
Rock, if I don't see you before then, I hope everybody else has a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year.
Please be careful traveling back home. It's a long ways. And we will talk again the end of next week. Maybe a day later than normal, but we'll talk again next week. Merry Christmas to you. Ramsey, thank you again for being here. We want to thank all of you that listened to this edition of the End of the Line Podcast, powered by DuckSouth.com.